You're listening to the Rockingham Baptist Church podcast. We hope you enjoy our sermon of the week. For more information, please visit rockingham.org.au.
What a beautiful sense of the presence of Jesus here. From when we walked in the building, you could hear joy in the house. And your worship just lifted the roof off. And actually, Liz, you just preached my message. So the Holy Spirit is speaking, which is wonderful. Well, good morning to those watching online. We are a little bit late this morning, but that's all right. The Lord's been speaking already, and he's got something to say today. So what a great start to the year we've had. And I've had some wonderful feedback from you all about our summer parable series. And wasn't last week wonderful, all joining together and worshipping and praying in unity for our school and our school staff? It was just a wonderful time. Thank you to you all for contributing to that, whether it was food or whatever you did in organising. It was absolutely wonderful. And for those school staff and teachers that teach elsewhere, you were not forgotten either. We were upholding you in prayer this week, and we trust that Jesus was very real and close to you as you shared his love and light with the students or the staff that you were starting your year with. Well, if you were here last week, we were reminding ourselves of the incredible vision that the Lord placed on the heart of this church family to reach the children and families in our community for Jesus. Essentially, it was your heart for the community. And we heard of the huge sacrifices that many here made to bring that vision into being. And it was also so good to hear some of those practical stories or stories about us along the way, wasn't it? From Ashby, from Steve, from Louise, thank you so much for that. Many of those stories I had not heard. But I asked you a question last week, and I want to ask it again this morning. Has that vision changed? Are we done? Have we done our job and now it's time to just pat ourselves on the back and wipe our hands and leave it there? Or is there still work to be done? Of course, you know what I'm going to say. I believe there is still more work to be done. And no matter who the pastor is of the church or was at the time, if the vision is God's vision, then that doesn't change, does it? In fact, we believe that it is the time and the season to pick up that mantle once again, albeit in a slightly different way. We're not going to start up a new school this year, but we're going to intentionally and sacrificially give again and serve again and continue to sow into the children and families of this community. Are you with me? We aim to do that this year by increasing our spiritual and practical care and connection with our school, by honing our prayer and practical resources into growing our children and families ministries here at RBC, and by discovering how we can grow as family together to care for each other and those around us so we can, or as we live, that life of discipleship. And as we do each February in our Heart for the House month, we're going to be setting the scene for this year. We're going to be launching some new initiatives, reminding ourselves of our values, vision and mission, and inviting us all to contribute our part within this family. So this morning, very quickly, I want to lay a foundation by asking this question. How do we live the life of faith, hope, and love that Christ calls us to live? How do we do that? And of course, we know that the only way is just what Liz said. It's to love the Lord our God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. The greatest way to live is to love, and in fact, whatever we do, no matter how skilled, gifted, recognized, charismatic, or wonderful we are, and we're all of those things, right? Okay. Well, some of us are anyway. If we do that and have no love, it's like a ringing gong or a clashing cymbal. That's all pretty easy to say, I know, and we know it and we can quote that. But what about the living part of it? And what a great way to begin this month and a new church year, remembering and celebrating the greatest act of sacrificial love. Thank you, Trevor and Liz, once again. So I want to look closer at the way Jesus loved for a few minutes this morning and draw out three principles for us to consider. Just before the final Passover that we've just heard about, with his disciples, Jesus had just performed another most startling act of humility, an act of servanthood and love. And we know that was the act of washing the disciples' feet. I wonder if you've ever stopped to consider the gravity of this act of Jesus. As I read this description, if it helps, why don't you close your eyes and imagine how the disciples felt in this moment. Jesus, the rabbi, the undisputed master of his band of disciples, strips himself bare to the waist and kneels before each of them, taking their filthy feet in his bare hands and tenderly washing them. It was not only an act of kindness and servanthood, but also an act of utter humiliation, especially when you consider the first century context. It was humiliating for a rabbi to perform a task that was considered only suitable for the lowest, the lowliest of household servants. It was humiliating for a rabbi to kneel before his disciples in subservience. He washed the feet of his beloved disciples. He washed the feet of the one he knew would betray him. He washed the feet of those he knew would deny knowing him. How could Jesus, fully human, completely strip himself of pride and position in order to humbly serve his disciples? Well, John gives us the answer to this question in verse 3 of chapter 13. He says, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. Jesus knew fully and completely who he was in relation to God the Father. He knew whose he was. He knew his purpose on earth and he knew his eternity. Jesus' identity, if you like, was completely and fully resting in his relationship with his Father. He didn't have to prove his worth. He didn't have to defend his position as Lord and King. He didn't need any affirmation because he already had God's. Remember the words of God the Father when Jesus came out of the water of baptism? What did he say? This is my beloved Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. So let me ask you, whose are you today? 1 John 3:1 says, see what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. No question about it. That is what we are. So my first point this morning is Jesus-centered identity and worth enables us to love. When our security, our worth, our identity is based solely and grounded in our relationship with Jesus and what he says about us, We don't need to constantly prove ourselves or seek human affirmation, do we? We're able to love selflessly, sacrificially, with humility, and with a servant heart. Once we know whose we are, we can't help be motivated to love because He loved us first. What a wonderful thing that is. Reflecting again on the washing of the disciples' feet, it was love that moved Jesus to want to serve those He led. It was a selfless love that motivated His acts of service. Don't you find it's the same with us? If you love someone, of course you want to do something for them. You want to serve them, don't you? It's kind of easy, actually, to serve someone you love. When was the last time you served your partner or your family or someone that's close to you? Was it this morning, even? We love to serve those we love, but we're called to take this one step further. We're called to love the family of believers. We're called to love our neighbours. We're even called to love our enemies. Eek. So how can we do what Christ commands us to do? We can love like this when and because we have received and experienced the deep transforming love of the one who calls us His. We are His children. We are His own. And He loved us first. Listen to these words from 1 John 4. If anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them and they in God. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. And it goes on further. We love because He first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And He has given us this command, which we've just heard. Anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. Then in John 15:12, Jesus said, My command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Got it, right? Love is who Jesus is. It's the foundation of His mercy, His grace, His justice, His hatred of sin, and even His judgment. It's the foundation of His speaking and His silence, His actions and, at times, His perceived inaction. He loves us. And this love, Jesus Himself, is transformational. We cannot not be affected if we have had a genuine saving encounter with the God who is love. It's impossible to know Jesus truly and not be transformed by this love, by His love. In fact, Paul describes what a love-transformed disciple looks like in 1 Corinthians 13. We all know this passage because we hear it at weddings, but actually Paul was talking to the church here when he said, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonour others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. How are we going with loving? It's okay, we're all human. We're real. Me included. Hey, darling. You see, the manifestation of God's profound love in and through us will have a more powerful impact in the lives of others, listen to this, than the strength of our faith or the spectacular nature of our giftedness. Did you hear that? Maybe I should read that again. The manifestation of God's profound love in and through us will have a more powerful impact in the lives of others than the strength of our faith or the spectacular nature of our giftedness. My second point then is Jesus' love for us motivates us to love. Ephesians 5:2 says, "And walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God." And finally, I just want to remind us, in case we forget in our zeal as we serve and love others, because we're good at forgetting. Thank you, Trevor, for reminding us of that. We're not only saved by grace alone, but we're called into discipleship as sons and daughters into family with Jesus by grace alone. It's all about grace. It is the grace of God that calls unworthy, imperfect people like me and like you to partner with him in the greatest cause of all. We're not worthy. We're not chosen because we are better than anyone else. We're not better than anyone else because we are chosen. We did not deserve it and we still don't deserve it. But it's only by the wonderful gift of grace, the gift of the grace of God, so that no one can boast, as Paul says in Ephesians. Remember the words of Paul in 2 Corinthians 12, 9 to 10. He says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardship, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." I wonder if we do really delight in those things or whether we're caught complaining and grumbling and yeah. No matter who we are or what we're going through, we have the gift of the grace of God that is sufficient for all we need. And from this personal experience of God's grace, we also extend this gift of amazing grace to others. Grace must be central in all our relationships, even the ones that are difficult. So my final point is this: Jesus' gift of grace to us characterizes our love. A deep understanding of grace liberates us. It helps us to acknowledge our weakness without feeling the constant pressure to prove ourselves to others or even to ourselves, while we rest in God's strength and power. John 1:16 to 17 tells us that out of his fullness we have all received grace in place of grace already given. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Isn't that wonderful? It is out of his fullness we have all received grace through Jesus Christ. Out of the fullness of the grace we have received, we are a family united in Christ, living faith, living hope, living love. And as we are serving and loving each other and our community around us, let's remember that our love is enabled by a Jesus-centered identity. It's motivated by Jesus' love in us and characterized by his grace that has been lavished on us. In other words, it's all about Jesus.
Thank you for listening to the Rockingham Baptist Church podcast. If you would like to learn more about our church family, get involved, or have someone pray for you, you can email us at office@rockingham.org.au or send us a message on Facebook.